Well, good morning and welcome back to the Broadcast Retirement Network. I'm Jeff Snyder, and this is BRN AM for Tuesday, November 10th, 2020. And here are our top stories. Congress is working to protect credit scores during COVID, and is the Series A venture market overhyped? Joining me now to discuss this and more, Dan Klein is lead advisor and executive producer for Seven Investing. Hey, Dan, welcome back to the program. Great to see you again this morning.
Hey, good morning, Jeff. Great to be here.
So let's jump right in. Congress now is looking like it may take action around credit scores that have been impacted around the pandemic. What can you tell us here?
Well, the intent is good, but I'm not sure they're going to accomplish the right thing. So they're talking about things like, well, if you owe money but have a repayment plan, your credit score can't go down. And that sounds good in theory, but let's look at what the point of the credit score is. The goal of a credit score is to decide, is to help the lender decide how worthy you are to repay the money. And for that, they need the entire picture. So if your credit score is sort of artificially inflated, they're just going to look at your bank account, your debt balance. They're going to look at other things. So it's just going to kind of make the credit score less meaningful for that person. I understand you don't want people that have COVID-19 related debt to be dinged on their credit, but that debt's still real. So I'd feel a lot better if there was some sort of debt forgiveness or debt repayment or you know, government program where you could get that debt, you know, interest free or something like that. I'm not sure we really want to monkey with the credit score.
Very good points here, Dan. And the credit score really is the basis for all lending. And, you know, just make sure the audience is aware of that. I mean, in terms of you go to take a loan for a car, you go to take a loan for a house or buy a house or get a mortgage, that credit score is the basis for all that. And we've actually seen lenders, and we've talked about this on the show with you and others, we've seen lenders really scrutinize finances, not only finances during the pandemic, but pre-pandemic, really kind of reflecting back on what they learned during 2008, that maybe they needed to be a bit more scrutinizing of not only financials, but also your credit.
Yeah, it's an important number, but it's also a flawed number. So my credit score is you know, in the higher end, but I've had too many inquiries in the past 2 years. So we thought we were going to move. So we did a credit check at a place we were thinking about renting. I applied for a credit card. When I got my eyes done, the laser surgery, that I financed. So it wasn't like I was taking out inordinate amounts of credit. It was just I was taking advantage of financing deals on things that I was going to easily be able to pay off anyway, or I had life situations where they check your credit. That hurts my credit score. That's not really a real picture of where my finances are, and some lenders are going to look at that nuance and understand it. Other lenders are not. It's why when you're borrowing money, you really want to look at who's lending you the money, and you might want to find a mortgage broker who can find you exactly the right fit, or you might want to, let's say you're buying a car, you might want to sit down and join a credit union or go to your credit union and talk to them about the loan. You really want people who take a holistic view of your finances and look and say, okay, Jeff ran up $20,000 worth of debt during the pandemic because he wasn't working. Now that's not the case with either of us, but let's say Bill, because that's neither of us, ran up this debt, but now it's 2 months after the pandemic, he's paid it off because he was being cautious with his cash, he was paying minimums, but when he went back to work, he paid a bunch of debt off. Well, carrying that debt's going to be a negative, even though paying it off will be a positive. So you really want credit decisions, and I'm not sure I want Congress making these decisions. The intention is good, but I think they can do more with stimulus than they can do with kind of muddying the waters of what your credit score is.
Yeah, I mean, I think it just seems like getting involved in something, you know, anytime this has happened in the past where, you know, government gets involved and they try to just kind of arbitrate what is a good credit score and patching things up, it just creates, in my opinion, market dislocations that have a negative effect, that can have a real negative effect down the line. But Dan, doesn't the credit score, isn't understanding the credit score, this is part of basic financial literacy. And I think people need to understand not only the credit score, what you were describing earlier about the credit score, but also the importance of budgeting and finances and how it all fits together. I think that's the bigger issue that at hand here.
Yeah, absolutely. And look, when it comes to credit cards, you should not be buying things with credit cards that you can't pay off at the end of the month unless they're essentials. If your refrigerator breaks and you need a new refrigerator and you don't have the cash to pay for it, you might have to finance one. And in that case, you need to sit down and make a plan for how do I pay this off while paying the least interest possible. That's where you look for 18-month, you know, zero interest financing. You know, we talked about my eyes. It was about $4,000 to get laser eye surgery, an amount I could have paid off. But we have an HSA account, so I didn't want to deplete my HSA account in case we had something where we needed to hit our $3,000 deductible. But by financing over 18 months at 0% interest, I can use the HSA to pay that off monthly without taking a big chunk out of there, sort of staying even with the amount that gets put in by my wife's company each quarter. So we can be in position to deal with the medical emergency. So that's a smart use of credit. It's not costing me any money, and it's leaving that money in my bank account or my stock account or wherever it is, so I can earn. But yeah, you need to understand your credit score. Most cases, your credit card, assuming you have one, will give you a free credit score. That's a pretty broad view of all three of your scores, and you should monitor it for big changes. Now, there'll be changes every month. As you run up a balance, it'll go down. As you pay off that balance, it will go up. If that's the cycle, if you use credit cards to pay for things but pay them off at the end of the month, be aware that that happens. But you might see a shift. Like I saw maybe 8 or 9 months ago, my credit score dropped by 100 points just for no reason out of nowhere. And because I wasn't going to use my credit score for anything, I decided I would wait for a couple of updates. And like two updates later, it just fixed itself. So who knows why it was wrong, but I was fully aware of it. And I certainly would have taken steps to find out what had happened if it looked like, you know, something had changed, because it could mean a stranger took out a credit card in your name and ran up debt, or who knows what it is. So you really do need to manage these things.
Yeah, I think understanding the credit score, how to manage debt, your budget, financials, really important here. And I would agree with you, Dan, that Congress getting involved in this when they can be focused on stimulus and other things, really important. I want to go to a quick commercial break. When we come back, is the fintech market for Series A funding overheated? You're going to want to stay tuned right here on BRN AM.
Imagine a new television network that will make you richer, healthier, and in control of your financial future. This network is for the policewoman in Nashville, Tennessee, the baker in Dubuque, Iowa, the teacher in Lexington, Kentucky. We want to make the idea of savings and retirement culturally relevant. But what do you see as a defining issue of the midterms?
Especially for the smaller businesses, I mean, they are the lifeblood of the American economy.
Featuring exclusive interviews, current affairs, and docuseries.
33 yeah. years old, you retired early.
The philosophy is money only matters if it helps you live a life that you love.
But you got to start thinking about retirement as soon as you get in.
The Broadcast Retirement Network will drive very high engagement with premium partnerships. So this isn't retirement and savings for your parents or grandparents. This is for all Americans. And we're going to change the way you think about money. Welcome to the next frontier of retirement and savings. This is BRN, the Broadcast Retirement Network.
Hi, folks. Joe Namath here, and if you're on Medicare, this is important. You're now entitled to eliminate copays and get dental care, dentures, eyeglasses, prescription coverage, in-home aids, unlimited transportation, and home-delivered meals, all at no additional cost. Plus, your zip code may have coverage with the Give Back benefit that adds money back to your Social Security check every month. Look, with the uncertainty of the virus and vaccines, you need to get everything you're entitled to. Here's the bottom line. Call to get significant benefits at no additional cost and see if your zip code has coverage with the Give Back benefit. Millions of people have trusted the Medicare Coverage Helpline. You can too. Call now. It's free.
Call 1-800-924-3920. That's 1-800-924-3920.
Welcome back. We're talking to Dan Klein of 7 Investing. Dan, thanks so much for staying with us this morning.
Thanks for keeping me.
So let's talk about fintech funding, Dan, because this really has been the year of technology for obvious reasons, the pandemic. A lot of conversations about we've had over the year with about Visa buying Plaid, the Ant Group, et cetera. But is it your sense that Series A funding, which is basic funding for a lot of these startups, that this is really an open, an overheated market at this point?
Yeah, it's like the late 90s. It's a land grab, and there's a lot of ideas that sound like good ideas, and not all of them are going to work. But if you're a VC, if you're someone who's investing in these early rounds, you have to put your money somewhere. I mean, you don't have to, but that's kind of your job.
Yeah.
And it is a market where if you have one hit, that might make up for 10 failures. So then you see companies are IPOing, and they're trading at these ridiculous, unheard of values. So if your job is to invest money, it isn't for the company to be successful. That's a benefit. It's for you to make your money back. So if you can, you know, get 5% of an early company, it IPOs without a product, without revenue, and with just an idea, and it shoots up 10,000 times, well, you're just going to, after the lockup period, sell some of your stake and make your profit. So it's basically mirrors what's happening in the stock market. There are a lot of people that are buying shares of speculative companies. And I'll give one that a lot of people talk about, Nikola Motors. Nikola is a company that in theory, because they don't have a product, is going to make a hydrogen cell powered tractor trailer. That sounds great. They have some interesting people in their management team, but they basically have an engineering department and a sizzle reel. They don't have a product, and it's traded at tremendous values. I understand what people are doing. They're trying to catch lightning in a bottle. And that's kind of your job as a venture capitalist. As an individual investor, I will tell you, this is a terrible idea. There are lots of good companies that aren't necessarily going to go up 10,000 times in 6 months, but that's not investing. That's guessing. That's speculating. So the reality is, as an individual investor, you can tune out the noise. If you don't know about the company, if you're just guessing, look, we've talked about Ant Group and they're having their issues with China, but I assume they're going to IPO. And that IPO is a little bit different than traditional IPOs because they're a very mature company. We know a lot about their business. But many of these IPOs that are coming out, all you have is an S1, or in the case of some of these direct listing IPOs, you don't even have that. And people are buying based on it being a hot name. Wait a few quarters. And I've said this so many times, I feel like I'm a broken record, but pull up any hot tech company, any hot company at all, and pull up their 10-year chart. It will not matter. Let's say Amazon. Didn't matter if you bought in the first week or the second year. Like, it's absolutely irrelevant in terms of how wealthy you are or how much money you made on that investment. So there's no reason. You're not a venture capitalist. Nobody is judging you based on how early you got in. Wait and see until you have some numbers.
Dan, you mentioned this example of Nikola Motors, where they have a concept and there's no finances behind it. They don't have a product, they're not making money. And when you said the late 90s, it took me back right there where there were businesses who were not making money, receiving tremendous amount of investing. What's to stop us from kind of revisiting what we experienced in the late 90s, which for those who may not remember, big run up in an appreciation in tech products, and then boom. The market fell out in 2000, I think it was, 1999, 2000, and a lot of people were left holding the bag. What's to protect individual investors and also institutional investors, pension funds and others, in some of these big guesses, I guess?
Yeah, so you got to look at the path to revenue. And I worked for a startup called Uproar.com in the late 90s that IPO'd first in Hungary and then later in the US markets. And here's the problem. It was a great company. We were a top 25 website in terms of traffic. This was a company that could absolutely drive people. We had trivia, we had bingo, we had a lot of great games. We put Family Feud online. It was a big popular company. Here's the problem. The online advertising market didn't support our cost structure. And there was no feasible way it would. I would argue that until the cloud became cheap and common, even 10 years later, the cost structure wouldn't make sense. So when you look at any of these startups, you have to go, okay, is there a demand? Will they be able to make this at a price they could sell it for? You know, when you look at something like Amazon, which lost tons and tons of money building their infrastructure, you could always see what they were doing and why they were doing it. When you look at a Tesla, even though they're a company that has on paper made money, they've traditionally lost money, they've raised money an awful lot of times, but when you look at their roadmap and where they can get to, you can go, okay, there's a plausible argument for this being a very profitable company. That's often not the case with many of these startups. I'll give you another hot one that people like to talk about, Genius Brands. Genius Brands is a kids television company, and their whole argument is, well, if we could be the Netflix for kids, there's all this demand. Here's the problem. They don't own any intellectual property anybody cares about. So that's going to be a really difficult road. It's the old argument. Geesh, if my pizza place that's Chipotle for pizza could only get 1% of the total pizza market, I'd be doing really well. Well, that's easier said than done. So I'd be very skeptical of any of these companies. And I'd wait until I see what the path to revenue is and whether it's realistic. And you're going to find that a lot of these companies aren't realistic. I'll give you a special warning in the biotech space. A lot of people are investing in companies that have products that need to go through FDA testing, that may not work, that may not get approved. That's really, really speculative. And I'm not saying it's always a bad idea. We've had some 7 investing picks in that space. We also have someone on our team that all he does is study that. Even then, it should be a very small percentage of your portfolio. Same goes with cannabis stocks, an area I follow a little bit. Be very, very skeptical. It's boring to buy stalwart companies. It's boring to buy shares of Microsoft or Amazon or Apple, but history tells you that's a good idea.
Yeah, I just feel like we're kind of, you know, history repeats itself. And look, the markets are, you know, you've got the animal spirits, I guess, take over, and you've got that. And so, you know, you have to be wary of that. Last question, Dan. Venture capital isn't the panacea that a lot of people think it is. I mean, we hear about the Facebooks. We hear about some of these companies that have grown through VC. But there's a lot of strings that are attached. I think you alluded to some of them, that the purpose of a VC is to get his or her money or get their money back in multiples of what they invested, right? I mean, that's the whole point of putting your capital to work. But that comes with strings oftentimes.
Yeah, if you're in this situation, you want to look at the history of the VC. Is this a VC that's patient? Is this a VC that puts more money in as long as you're hitting your goals? Is this a VC that's going to push you to go public before you should? It's a very differentiated field, and there's obviously VCs that are really good partners. My former employer, the Motley Fool, has $150 million. I may be understating that number, venture fund, but some of the companies they invest in, they can also advance using some of their brands and some of their talent, some of their people. So right. You really want to look at what can this venture capital fund do for me beyond the money. And look, the other issue is when I worked at Uproar, our CEO got replaced, and our CEO went on to found LogMeIn, which became an incredibly successful company. So he did it twice, but he got pushed aside as CEO, was CFO for a while, and that was the company he created, his vision. So you really want to know what you're getting when you take money from a VC.
Really important to know. So it's not all a panacea. Well, Dan, always a pleasure chatting with you. Really great analysis this week, and we look forward to having you back on the program for the BRN Sunday podcast a little bit later. Have a great rest of the week, and we'll talk to you again very soon.
Jeff, I'll see you then.
Thanks, Dan. Great to see you. Thanks for sharing your perspective. And that wraps up this episode of BRN AM. Have a topic of interest or someone you think we should talk to? Drop us a line. And don't forget, for all the news in retirement, markets, technology, personal finance, so much more, check out our daily newsletter, The Morning Pulse. So until tomorrow, I'm Jeff Snyder. Stay safe, keep on saving, and don't forget, roll with the changes.
Are you being audited, and do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Is the IRS threatening to take more of your money? Don't fight the IRS alone. The Tax Doctor is here to help you negotiate your tax bill and reduce your stress. The IRS can freeze your assets and seize your bank accounts, but you can stop these IRS actions. The Tax Doctor will work with you using our years of experience to represent your case to help you get the best resolution under the IRS guidelines. Help is here to deal with the IRS to reduce your stress. We've handled thousands of cases, so we know what we're doing. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, do not call the IRS alone. Call a Tax Doctor now for a tax emergency analysis.
Call 800-224-6439.